This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. When the Holstein Milk Company was set up in 2010 to provide fresh dairy products from grass to glass, it could be seen as a fanciful attempt to sell milk to a population that wasn't accustomed to consuming milk as a diet staple. Nearly 15 years later, though, they've proven the naysayers wrong, and the Holstein Milk Company has today morphed into Farm Fresh Berhad, fresh off a public listing on Bursa Malaysia last month. What are the ambitions of Malaysia's leading dairy producer now that it's bankrolled to the tune of 1 billion ringgit post-IPO? We catch up today with Loy Tuan Yee, co-founder and group managing director of Farm Fresh Berhad. Loy, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. It's always good to have you.
Thank you, Shan. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the listing, which is currently trading at a 27% premium on its IPO price of 1 ringgit 35 cent. You started out with a valuation of 2.5 billion ringgit, and your current market cap stands at over 3 billion ringgit now. What do you think accounts for investor enthusiasm for Farm Fresh?
Oh, well, I think we are very, very delighted that we have given this endorsement by the investment community, at least our company with such a premium. We are indeed very, very grateful to those investors. But I think what in our view, FMCG company being a food company, I think over the years, we are able to build a business that in our view is very, very resilient. You know, so I think we have demonstrated that over the last one decade, you know, in a good time, we are growing, you know, even during the bad time, we still are able to grow our company. In pandemic time, we are still able to. So I think that tells investor that, you know, if you done a right, if you build a right brand, right, you know, where the consumer actually love your brand. And then, you know, this is where day in, day out, you know, they will stay loyal with you. And then, you know, it's a very basic essential for your kids, right? You know, so I think this is where we have demonstrated that, you know, our business, the model that we built is very, very evergreen as well. So keeping to the brand promise is one of the most important things for us to go forward. Yeah.
Given the economic headwinds at the moment, particularly rising commodities prices, could investors perhaps be overestimating Farm Fresh's profit potential in the short to medium term? After all, we did see operating profit decline by 6.1% for the 9 months ended 31st December 2021, in part due to increases in raw input costs. So could perhaps profit potential be quite modest in this era of rising costs?
Yeah, I think that is very true, Sha. We have seen unprecedented kind of cost escalation. Which is something that it happened very quick and then in a very big scale as well. So I think we are mindful of that as well. In fact, what happened is that last September, we actually did increase a bit, pass on some of the cost escalation to our customer as well. And while we continue to improve our own operations to mitigate those cost pressure to us, for now, I think the Ukraine war actually make it worse again. Having things quite stabilized, you know, and then now you have the Shanghai lockdown again, you know, all this just a bit of unpredictable. It's very, very unpredictable now. So we are hopeful that, you know, if things are not improving over the next couple of months, right, we'll probably be forced to relook at, you know, to pass some of the cost increase to our customer. I think our competitors have increased their prices in a few rounds. We are still trailing them. So if need arises, I think probably in July or somewhere along the line, that we might push on another 50% price increase if that has to be done. Yeah.
Okay, so price increases could be on the table depending on how long these cost pressures run for. Have you factored in how that's going to impact your bottom line? Because in the quarter ending December 31st, you did see a 9% slump in revenue and a 14% drop in operating profit. And this was after you raised prices in September last year. So does this show how price elastic your products are? Can your customers really stomach more price increases?
Yeah, I think we can. If you look at our price, you know, on the supermarket shelf, our pricing is still by far, despite our qualities and freshness and all this sort of thing, our pricing is still kind of like cheaper than our competitor. So we do have cage space for that. You know, I think what happened in the past, you know, over the last, we have resisted price increase for 4 good years, right? You know, just to make sure that, you know, we wanted to make our milk, you know, able to reach the masses. And our margin are still quite there as well, right? By improving our efficiency, less wastages, you know, our teams are getting better routing to market planning and et cetera. That enabled us to actually absorb some of those incremental costs over the years. But the present situations are really unusual. It's not been seen like something like that. So I think to experience a few percent margin compression, I think it's very normal. In the light that, you know, this is a really cost increase. You know, the diesel price goes up, material feed, congruent price goes up, everything goes up, right? So I think this is something that we are mindful that, you know, that the cost that we are absorbing now. But I think if you look at our pricing per liter of fresh milk price, that we are pricing at 7-something, it's still a very, very reasonable price. But I think we do have the pricing power. Just like the last price increase, we do not see any reduction in our business and et cetera. So we will just have to calibrate that carefully, that we are mindful of our company interest as well as our consumer interest as well. Yeah.
Can I ask whether you're going to be impacted by the minimum wage increase that will be raised to 1,500 ringgit that will come into force next month? Is this something that will also be a cost pressure for you?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, so I think in our case is that I think our CFO, Carol, has run the numbers. The most likely that by 1st of May, when we implemented that, the impact to us may be another 1 million ringgit for those minimum wages that, you know, our general workers that don't fall under that category. Yeah.
But you're prepared to take that hit?
Yeah. I think for government to implement that policy nationwide, right, it's a good policy in the sense that, you know, there is a cost pressure to the business. However, I think then you have an elevated living standard by the rest and you will flow back to the business again. So I think you don't lose all, you know. So in our view that, you know, having policies, all the fellow Malaysians can fight along the way, right? You know, I think it's something that we are more than happy to accommodate. So as long as the level playing field is the same, right, you know, then I think it's not a problem to ask you.
Let's take a look at the IPO proceeds and what you have planned. You raised 300 million ringgit from the public issue of shares, which you'll use to expand domestic manufacturing hubs and also foray into new regional markets. So let's take both of these in turn. And I want to start with your overseas expansion, which you've been talking about for some time in previous interviews. You've mentioned Indonesia and the Philippines as two new markets that you've been eyeing. How far along are plans to set up a presence there? And what's your timeline to enter these markets?
So I think it's true. I think the last 2 years lockdown has actually derailed our expansion plan because we are unable to move and travel, right? Now with the borders opening up, I think soon we'll be traveling again. And then we hope that, you know, at this point of time, I think the Philippines are right on top of our priority. There is one place that I think we will be start looking at sites and then identifying partners and things like that. And hopefully that, you know, that we can come to some kind of a affirmative conclusion over the next few months. And then by doing so, we can actually lock down and then start to kick off the project by moving into that market soon. Now, the other overseas investment that is important to us is also our Australian plant. The Australian investment is very crucial to us because that is a very strategic investment for us. We needed a lot of fresh ingredients coming back from Australia to enable us to grow our Malaysian business. However much we produce in Malaysia fresh milk, we will never be enough, Shah, because, you know, our demand for our product is way more than what we can actually produce domestically. So that part of investment will continue to strengthen to ensure that, you know, not only support Malaysia, the Australian investment, but it will also support, say, for example, our Philippine processing plant in due course when we set up the plant in the Philippines or even in Jakarta, for example, right? So this ingredient will be the same ingredient that needs to be sent into this country for us to manufacture, to produce all the dairy products that are required for the domestic market.
How does the Australian facility feature in your supply chain at the moment? How much does it contribute in terms of the production process in the current supply chain?
So, you see, if you look at our factors, right, I think 80% of our ingredient is actually outsourced, right, you know, despite what we actually produce in Malaysia. So the reason why we say that Australia is very strategic and important to us It's unlike supply chain, for example. If you talk about you want to buy milk powder, like you want to buy milk powder, it's a global trade. You can get it from many parts of the world without any limitation because it's a very, very big commodity. However, when you want to narrow it down to fresh ingredient, like in particularly like dairy product like that, you don't have many choices. So in our case, over the years, we grew very dependent with one or two suppliers from Australia. And in that sense, it also poses some form of risk to us as well because we are over dependent, right? So since we have our Australian farm, we actually started our Australian farm with the genetic purposes. And I have a great partner, Adam. What we did is that, you know, we actually go further downstream in Australia to set up our own processing plant. And today, we are 100% self-sufficient. All the fresh ingredients from Australia are able to send back to Malaysia to support our growth in Malaysia. That role is also going to be taken, you know, not only to support Malaysia in a due time, you know, in places like, you know, when we want to expand to Philippines or when we want to expand to Indonesia, for example. So that role will have to be continued to be filled by Australian investment.
And what about Hong Kong? Because you have said that you view the Hong Kong market as potentially similar to Singapore. Are you looking to enter into Hong Kong in the near future?
Yeah. We already incorporated a company in Hong Kong now, Farm Fresh Hong Kong. And we are in the process of getting the FDA approval in terms of the product accreditations and the sampling and whatnot. So at this stage, as we speak, we are working on it, you know, and we hope that, you know, towards September, October this year, we can get those approvals, the import permit approval. And when that is done, I think we will start to look at, we will want to export to Hong Kong. In fact, Hong Kong, a lot of the milk down there is also imported, particularly from Thailand as well. So we see opportunities down there, you know, that, you know, our yogurt or white milk, our lactose-free milk, you know, those fresh category, we do see opportunities down there, yeah.
Do you see Hong Kong as a gateway to break into the greater China market, which has a huge milk market demand, yeah?
That probably no, because I think getting dairy product into China is a different, completely a different ball game. The CNCA approvals are very, very rigid. And I think in most cases, I think I don't see opportunity for us to actually export our dairy product into China for that matter. You know, I think although the markets are big, but they are very competitive as well. And I think the opportunity of, you know, getting in there, I think is probably lesser. If at all to China, I think our Australian plant will have more opportunity of exporting the Australian branded quality product in. But unfortunately, with, you know, the Australian and China relation wasn't that rosy at this point of time. So we just have to need to wait until times are better, and then we will have to work on the accreditation.
Mm. I'm speaking to Loi Tuan Yee, Group Managing Director of Dairy Producer, Farm Fresh Berhad. We'll discuss how resilient is local market demand for fresh milk products and whether Farm Fresh is adapting quickly enough to changing tastes and trends in just a moment. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and with me today is Loi Tuan Yee, Group Managing Director of local dairy producer Farm Fresh Berhad. Loi, you're focusing nearly half of your IPO proceeds on expanding your domestic production facilities. And I'm just curious whether this is to meet growing demand in the Malaysian market, or is this really meant more for export purposes? Is this reconfiguration to focus more on the regional rather than local demand?
Yeah, I think the plant expansion in our central region, for example, those are mostly for our domestic purposes rather than export. And, you know, regional expansion, we would like to be that, you know, with our own actual processing plant down there. Because for pasteurized milk, if they don't travel well, right, because the shelf lives are very short. So we need to have a physical presence down there to actually build our brand from there on. However, you know, the export to Singapore market is something that we are very, very focused on. And I think that we will intensify our effort in Singapore because it's the proximity. Yeah, this is why we need to do some plant reconfiguration. For example, the northern market are taken care of by Taiping processing plant. And then Johor will eventually more focus towards South plus the Singapore market. So we need to do some rejiggling of that and then to activate all the plan that we have in our mind.
Okay. I want to talk to you about areas of growth in terms of demand. Where do you see demand growing? In which particular regions in the country? Because for the price point, at first impression, Farm Fresh seems to cater to a more urban demographic. Is that where you're seeing growth in Malaysia at the moment, mostly in urban centers?
Not really, though. Our fresh chill category, in fact, continued to register very strong growth, you know, even over the past few months. So that tells you that, you know, I think it's across the board, whether it's the south or central and then or northern, for example, or even east coast. So I think in the sense that, you know, that the preferences for fresh is still, particularly our white milk, is still very, very strong. So what we see that, you know, in the coming months, when we roll out a liquid grow out milk for the children, that is a category that we will need a lot of education. That's just right, beside the AMP spending, right, that we are going to increase. Our home dealers also need to be properly trained that they be able to, you know, go to the household, you know, explain the benefits of the of our milk, for example, the fortified milk that we are going to launch. And then why, you know, sugars are bad for you, for example. So, you know, so I think these are the things that, you know, in the coming months, that when we want to grow, we wanted to grow in the space because the milk powder, grow out milk powder market is about more than 2 billion ringgit, right? So we hope with a better product, we are able to, you know, garner market share from that as it goes by.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, talk to me about how you decide what products to add to your line, yeah? Because currently you have about 135 stock keeping units. That's 135 different products. And you're adding this fortified milk product coming up next. You're also going to be introducing an ice cream line, if I'm not mistaken. So how do you, what's your market research like in terms of items that you're going to introduce to the public?
Yeah, I think the liquid grow-out milk is something that we have been looking at it for a while, right? You know, so this is where that when we realized that it was a good opportunity because the market wasn't offering a very honest product to the mama, right? So we think that, you know, by coming up with this, if it's not rocket science, we are not creating something, you know, like a very unusual product. It's just a very honest product, a fresh milk, fortified with vitamin D, the DHA and things like that, minus all the sugars, right? So I think it's a very, very basic. We just have to let the mama know that, you know, too much of sugar is going to be very harmful for your kids. So if this message is well communicated, we really see that, you know, in the coming years, this will become a very, very big category for us. Therefore, we are putting in, committing a huge resources in the coming months to ensure that this product SKU takes off. Ice cream is something that, you know, we have a little ice cream house in our UPM. You can try our ice cream. So this is the area that I think the category which is dairy related. And I think that as years goes by, we might want to get into the space by starting some very basic. Well, of course, we are not going to produce some super top notch like Häagen-Dazs, that kind of range. You know, it's more like an affordable fresh milk based ice cream or the yogurt ice cream, for example. That's what we are looking at here.
Okay, that's very interesting. And you have a very impressive distribution network through this home dealer network. At the moment, I believe you've got some 45 stockists. I think you're managing about 906 home dealers with over 1,700 agents nationwide to sell Farm Fresh products. How should we understand this home dealer setup? Is this akin to like an MLM of sorts?
We are not MLM, but you know, as you rightly pointed, I think Azmi has done a great job in that. In terms of building out the network. And you can imagine him dealing with 900 housewives, you know, and I think he needs to coordinate to motivate them, to guide them and things like that. So it is a very unique system, but basically it's not MLM. We are not MLM company. It's a very honest, straightforward production. It's just that if you're my home dealer, you buy the product from us, right? We make up a 45 stock available for you to drop by or they deliver to you. And then you buy the product, you have your margin, and then you just sell it to your friend and your office friend or your neighbor, for example, right? And then you make the margin. But because Farm Fresh brand has got a very high retention rate, right? You have to understand, it is not like, you know, you sell a set of, you know, cookwares or Tupperwares, for example, right? You spend so much of time, and then when the customer buy the product, maybe for 1 or 2 years, 3 years, they will not buy the same thing again, right? However, for our milk is different, right? You know, say for example, today you buy a box, you know, after when you finish, your kids finish, you know, and then 2 weeks later, you'll call the home dealer and say, I need another box of chocolate milk, or I need another box of fresh milk, for example. So it becomes very repetitive, and therefore, it becomes sustainable. So when they do that, as they broaden out their more customer base, today I start as a home dealer, I got 15 friends, and then the friend will recommend their friend again, and you got 30, you got 40, you got 50. So when you got more and more customer, and then you realize that, you know, to make 800, 1,000, 5, 2,000 ringgit in by distributing farm fresh product, a very honest business, you know, nothing high tech, and it become very, very sustainable. That's how we actually grow our model over the years.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a lot of demand to become home dealers? I mean, do you have the spare capacity to accommodate more dealers at this stage?
We do. So now I think we are going to the next phase of how to realign. You know, first we're looking at states, and then we're looking at district, for example, and then how to plan all the stockists to be able to service those home dealers. Because if they're too far away in one state, you got one, for example, right? Sometimes the distance are too far away, become not economic. So we are trying to pan it up by zoning it, you know, into a certain bigger district to have some stockists down there, so enable our home dealers to actually get the product at ease. But so these are all constantly we are looking at. So it's an ongoing thing that we continue to fine tune. Yeah.
Mm. Loy, we do see other dairy producers looking to enter the Malaysian market in a bigger way. Do you think you have enough first mover advantage to ward off any incoming competition?
Well, I'm not sure about that. You know, there are some very ambitious projects that they're talking about. I think I would want to comment about their investment, right? You know, so I think maybe Farm Fresh also inspired a lot of people to think that it was an easygoing, you know, the bed full of roses. And in truth, is that the case or not? I think in tropical dairy farming, there is a lot of challenges. You know, it's not about you have money, you can build out a big shed, you bring in, you know, tens of thousands of cow, and then you expect it, you know, turn to a cash cow, and then you sit down there and you collect the money. It's not so straightforward. I think the software, the people that you have is very important. It takes us 10 years to scale, you know. Even today, we are less than 10,000 cows, right? But we have a great brand, you know. I think in terms of branding, I think that is something that we are thankful. A lot of Malaysians are very supportive of our brand. Yeah.
All right. Loy, final question. As you mentioned, it took you a long time to grow the company to where it is today. And you did it with a lot of help. You had help from Kazana. You had a lot of mentorship opportunities from different programs. Reflecting on the journey that you've had so far, what lessons can be drawn that you think can be translated to broader agricultural development policy in Malaysia? I mean, we hear rhetoric from the leadership. They want to strengthen agri-industry. They think that, you know, agricultural technology should be a focus of the economy moving forward. But what do you think it will actually take to enable more people to become agripreneurs like yourself?
Wow, this is a big question, John. So I think to draw my experience in terms of, you know, we as a dairy farmer, I gotten a lot of help. I think Kazana role, you know, in our company is so, so important that I'm grateful that I have them on board. Usually for agri business, I think land is the biggest challenge, right? How many farmers can afford to buy a few acres of land? You know, that land is so expensive, right? And agriculture business that is very laborious, and then you really have to spend time to actually make it work. So capital itself is a constraint, right? If you were to use that capital to buy land, then you've got no money to actually set up the business. It's very hard. So to me, the biggest role the government can play is to actually create cluster, right? With the land, you know, that is designated for food production, for example, right? Then you develop the place, and then you bring in the participants, you know, and then give them the proper infrastructure to support them. With all the technical expertise, you know, whether for MOA, from whichever departments, right, you are able to cluster them together and you'll be able to help them. Agriculture is not just about producing. Marketing is very important as well, because everything is so perishable, right? So if you are not able to meet the market with what you produce timely, right, then you're going to have problems. So this is something that I think it actually warrants a lot of proper planning, whereby if you get that part right, you know, if you provide infrastructure for them, if you are able to get those young people to come in to do agriculture, whatever they want to plant, vegetable, or fruit, or anything for that matter, you know, and if you're able to match what they are produced timely to the supermarket, to the market, and I think that will become a very, very sustainable business model. Yeah.
Loy, thank you so much for sharing your insights into the business. And we look forward to catching up with you again in another year's time, probably, on how Farm Fresh has grown. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Sha. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Loi Tuan Yee, Group Managing Director of Farm Fresh Berhad. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.